So today we're going to work on another one of the fundamental beliefs as we started through some of those. I'm hopping around to different ones. Today I want to touch on the fundamental belief that we have on the Sabbath day, the importance of that. Oftentimes when we think about that, we go, well, this is automatic. This is at the core of who we are and what we do. That the Sabbath day is a defining doctrine for us because it definitely sets us apart from the rest of the world. Everybody else is going about their day, shopping, going to work, so many different things that they may be doing at home. You may see them raking their yards or mowing the grass. But we set this day aside. We're doing something very different in the church because we believe that this is a binding part of God's law. It's a binding component of the relationship that God wants to have with us that's built within the fourth commandment. This is something that is a defining aspect of our church life, of who we are. We cease from our normal work, we cease from our normal days, and we kind of reorient ourselves. It's a reset every week. Every single week we get this time that we get to set aside and do something different. Completely get rid of everything else, which is sometimes hard because we don't get to automatically just shut our mind off. We go back to, oh, I have a stack of papers on my desk that I need to deal with. But we try our best to kind of shove that aside and say, hang on, let's reframe this. Let's look at this from a different perspective. Let's work through this and understand why God has done some of these things. You know, the Sabbath day, we have a booklet solely designed to the Sabbath day and what that means and the impact that that has on our lives. When we think about the history through the church, when Worldwide Church of God decided to change its stance on the Sabbath and shifted to Sunday, they united spent months trying to reorient, trying to figure out exactly what this meant, what the Sabbath meant, and start to really look at the particular belief built around God saying, this is my Sabbath. This is my holy day. This is a set aside time from everything else. From the very beginning, and what they ended up, as they started to try to craft and understand the Sabbath a little bit better, to understand the details of it, what it means, how it impacts our lives, they actually leaned quite heavily on a Seventh-day Adventist. He was an instructor at a university up in Michigan. It was Andrews University, by a man named Samuel Bakioki. And he did his doctrinal dissertation about the Sabbath. So he's got an extensive amount of knowledge about the Sabbath and what it means and the impact that it has. He actually had the opportunity to study at the Vatican and under the aegis of the Roman Catholic Church. And so he had access to all of their documents, all their archived material explaining how that shift occurred, what happened throughout the years. And as they documented the whole story, he was able to follow that and extensively record and detail and lay out exactly what impact the Sabbath had, why the changes had been made, and all of how that unfolded. And he wrote a book called From Sabbath to Sunday. It's a wonderful book explaining the intimacy of the Sabbath and the importance of the Sabbath. I don't know if any of you may have been around this area at that time, but actually he was invited in 1995 to give a presentation down in Indianapolis at the church down there to lecture and go over some of these details because the Sabbath was one of those key pieces that really created a lot of confusion in the church when Worldwide goes, well, we'll be here next week. I remember that as a child. We were sitting there on the Sabbath, and they said, next week we won't be here on the Sabbath. We'll be here on Sunday. And I looked at my mom, and she looked at us boys, and I remember as soon as church was over, we grabbed all of our stuff, and we headed out the door, and we never went back. But for a lot of people, that created a lot of confusion because everything that had been taught and explained and this day that had been set aside for years was all of a sudden just, oh, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And so it was good that we bolstered our belief in the doctrine. And they went back to the roots. Worldwide easily threw it out the window. And so United wanted to get that ground and say, what is the importance of this? What is the significance of this? Which is why I want to go through all of these fundamental beliefs, even if we think we know the Sabbath well, we understand the Sabbath well, what it means to us as individuals, because we're here every single week. We set aside the time. And going through this, hopefully it'll help to open up some areas of your life that maybe you've never considered when we think about the Sabbath and the way it's supposed to work. Because when we look at the Sabbath, there's several different aspects of it. There's several different elements of how the Sabbath works, the ins and outs. Every single one of our families functions a little bit differently on the Sabbath. A lot of people have family traditions on the Sabbath that they do on Friday evening or that they do on Saturday. And so we're all a little bit unique. In one sense, we are all unified as the body of Christ, working together to love this day. But we also have a uniqueness about our Sabbath and how we carry our Sabbath. Ourselves on the Sabbath. In Exodus 20 and verse 8, it says, remember the Sabbath day. We'll come back to this later. You don't have to go there now. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Yeah. There's importance placed on this day, not because we just said, well, this is the day we want. God said, this is the day. This is it. This is my day. And he goes, I want you to be here. I want you to be part of this. And so this statement, when we think about it, this belief statement that we have, we're going to walk through this, as we've done with all of the other fundamental beliefs, it'll help us to understand a little bit of what we're looking at and what we're dealing with. So this is fundamental belief 2.1.10, 2.1.10. It says, we believe that the seventh day of the week is the Sabbath of the Lord our God. On this day, we are commanded to rest from our labors and worship God, following the teachings and example of Jesus, the apostles, and the New Testament church. We believe that the seventh day of the week is the Sabbath of the Lord our God. So it's not ours. It is God's. It's his day. On this day, we are commanded to rest from our labors and worship God, following the teachings and example of Jesus and the apostles of the New Testament. So it's a rather comprehensive statement when we think about this, because it takes into account not just our perspective, but it says this is God's. We started out by saying this is God's seventh day, this is a day of teaching. This is a day that we respect. This isn't something that we've created, but we're commanded to rest, so to cease from our labors, stop all of the work that we have in our lives, and we're supposed to worship God. We're supposed to worship God. So it's not just removing ourselves from our normal daily activities. It says, but there's a refocus that we have to have. There's a more important focus. Now, we know that we're supposed to think about God all week long. And God is always supposed to be part of that connection that we have. We talk to him like a true father. If you can think about how you talk to relatives, going to your father and having a conversation with your father, that happens all week long. Hopefully, every second of every day, there's some sort of connection there. Because he is our sole key primary helper in our entire life. But that also doesn't mean that we just sit there and we pray all day. And so as we think about this, that these two components, rest and worship, these components that we are supposed to use on the Sabbath day, we do rest physically. We stop all the work from however we gain our normal income, and we stop doing all our house chores. And kids love that because, like, all right, don't have to make my bed. All right, you can still do your normal, you make your bed, things like that. But when we're talking about mowing the yard and raking the leaves and doing all this deep cleaning of your house, these are things that become our customary work and that we try to set aside. We try to put that away because we know that those house chores are part of our work that we're doing, that God goes, no, get away from that. Get out of your normal routines. He goes, I don't want this to just be another day doing the laundry and doing the yard work. He wants to stop all of that customary work because he says, today is special. Today is different. There's not only a physical rest that we have, there's a spiritual rest that comes with that. And that's why there's multiple components and facets of this as we get into it, as we develop this relationship with God and we understand the significance of what that means to set aside this day. The importance, the health benefits that it has on us to pull back a little bit. The world's going 100 miles an hour. A lot of people, you may have passed some soccer fields and football fields, and there's sports going on. It just, their week doesn't slow down. All week long they're working and doing all these things. The weekend is just as jam-packed full of activities. It becomes very cumbersome at times. And so we not only need that physical rest, but we need the spiritual rest so that we can refocus. Remember, okay, God is the primary focus of our lives. He brings us into this relationship so that we have a closeness, not just so that he goes, oh, it's another day. This will let you recuperate. This will let you recover. This will give you energy for the rest of the week. He goes, no, there's a focus on me this day. There's a focus on learning. And that's one of the dimensions that he holds here is that we'll bring up and look at is that this isn't just for a small group of people. This is for all of humanity and the benefits that will actually come from that when the rest of humanity realizes it. When God opens up everybody else's eyes and takes off those blinders and they understand what the Sabbath actually holds for them and the benefit to all of humanity. There's a definition here. This comes from Webster's New Universal Abridged Dictionary from 1983. It says, the Sabbath is the day set apart in the fourth commandment as the Decalogue to be observed as a day of rest for all secular labor or employment. This was originally the seventh day of the week, Saturday, as the day on which God rested from the work of creation. And this day is still observed by Jews and some Christians as the Sabbath. It's an interesting definition when we break it all down because this is confirmed historically through the Bible, that the Sabbath day is the biblical Sabbath, the seventh day of the week. Saturday still holds that. And they note that it's observed by Jews and some Christians. Now, we know we aren't the only ones. There's several other Christian groups out there that hold true to the Sabbath. But it's primarily known by the Jews. Most of you have probably at some point in your life been questioned, are you Jewish? All growing up, I go to church on Saturday. Are you Jewish? Nope, not Jewish. And the holy days are the same, right? You show up with your unleavened bread, and they go, what is that? And you go, what's unleavened bread? And they're, are you Jewish? No. And so there's certain things that get associated with the Jews because they still hold true to those days. And that's what's really interesting because a lot of these other Christian groups, they hold true to the Sabbath, but they don't hold the holy days in the same account. The holy days are viewed a little differently, but when we start looking at this, these are God's days. These are days that he has set aside, that he has been very deliberate and said, these are my Sabbaths. These are something different. And we know that that's the plan of God, that it helps us to understand exactly what he's doing with all of humanity and through the annual holy days, the annual Sabbaths. So the Sabbath, we worship a God by observing the Sabbath. And it's not a... The Sabbath is not an end. It's not an end point. But it is a means to an end. And what do I mean by that? What does that actually mean? We worship God by observing the Sabbath. It's a day in our lives that we change and we reorient and we set the day aside because it's supposed to be something different. If you flip back to Romans chapter 1, in verse 22, Romans chapter 1, verse 22, Paul talks about the state of the world at this time. And he has a focus that those who have rejected God, they worship and observe and have these idols. They end up focusing on the creation more than the creator. And this was at his time, and we still see that today. The principle resonates extremely well, which is why we see so many people focused on other things, whether it's trying to make money so that they can accumulate all of these things, or whether they think, you know, sports is where their kids are going in life, and that becomes their life, their core, their center of who they are. But ultimately, we still see this done in the same fashion today. If you look at Romans chapter 1, starting in verse 22, here it says, professing to be wise, Professing to be wise, they become fools and change the glory of the incorruptible God into an image, and change the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man, and birds and four-footed animals and creeping things. If you look at verse 24, it says, "Therefore God also gave them up to uncleanness and in lusts of their hearts to dishonor their bodies among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for the lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen." That they serve the creature or the creation, the things of this world, all the things that God created. It says, this becomes the focus of your life. This is what's becoming the idols. And this is applied to the Sabbath too. When we think about what we do on this day and how we handle ourselves, we do have to be careful that we're not worshiping this day. We're not worshiping the Sabbath. He commands us to keep this day. He commands us that this day is important. But if we start to really get to the point where this is the focus of our intentions, if this is the focus of our actions, that this day is the significant piece, we start to really border that pitfall of legalism. Because this day becomes our fundamental approach to Scripture. That this day carries more importance than the other things, instead of us going, God has set this day aside so that I can come to Him, so that we can reconnect with Him on a whole nother level by shifting away from our normal activities, shifting away from our normal responsibilities, the involvement that we have all week long. And so we have to be careful, because when we look at that, we can easily slip into that mindset that this day is special. And this day is that creation. It's part of that creation period. Those first 7 days, God set this day aside. He made this day what it is. And if this becomes the focus more than God, then we're falling into the same trap of what the world has done. And so we have to be careful with how strict we are with law keeping and the mindset that goes along with that, because we miss the true intent of what the Sabbath is designed for, and we can get consumed in worshiping this day rather than worshiping the Father. So in Judaism, especially for like Orthodox Jews, the Sabbath has become their point of worship. That day is so significant for them, and we'll look at it a little bit of the history why. So the title of my message today is The Sabbath, Origins and the Old Testament. So we're going to look at the beginnings of the Sabbath day, how it came about. We'll look at Leviticus and Exodus, and we'll go through Genesis. We'll look at these beginning chapters, books of the Bible, and we'll also look at how it plays into that New Testament. We'll get into Ezekiel and look at some of these factors that go into what happened with God's people, what happened to them. And we'll see how this came back up, how the Sabbath day kind of transitioned into this special piece of their religion. It became almost an idol for them. The Sabbath day set them apart from everybody else, not in the aspect of that God wanted, but from the aspect of said, we're different from you, that this day is significant. And so we'll look at that, because that'll speak to what holy means, what sanctified means, what setting apart means. Because if we don't understand that, we have a difficult time understanding exactly what God has done with us. Because He says, when I put my Spirit in you, He goes, I sanctify you. I separate you from everybody else. I separate you from the rest of the world. I separate you from your old lifestyle. These are the things that He's wanting from us. Now, it takes action. It takes work on our part to do some of those things. But it's a significant part that He has done something. God's involvement in this is everything. Here's a brief summary of what we'll be working through. So we're going to look at the origins and the Sabbath day, the Israel, which is the Old Testament, and see how all of that works in with some of these proofs. And we won't get on the last two today, but we'll pick that up at another time. So when we think about the Sabbath scripturally, the ultimate proof is going to come from God. of what this day means, the experience that we have, that's going to be on us. The experiences that we go through, the understanding what rest is, the experiencing that rest, that's all going to be how we interact on the Sabbath, our engagement on the Sabbath, what we're doing with our Sabbath. And the spiritual rest on the Sabbath is a huge benefit because it not only refreshes us at times, but it also shows our love for God, you know, keeping it, resting on it physically and spiritually, resetting what it is that we want in our lives, the fellowshipping that goes along. That's a huge piece of God's Sabbath day, Him bringing His people together. It's a good reminder for us that we're not alone, because many of us, we don't have people that live nearby. We don't get to see each other every single day. There's not a ton of interactions that we have. And so this day becomes special from the standpoint of God's bringing His family together weekly. It's a good reminder of what He's doing through the Sabbath. And it's not that this day is significant, that this day becomes our idol, but it's that this day has been set aside that we can do something special with it. And that's why we have to be careful that we toe that line of legalism of what the Sabbath actually truly represents. So if you flip back to Genesis chapter 2 with me, we'll get started all the way back at the very beginning. Genesis chapter 2, if you look at verses 2 and 3. So this goes back to the very beginning of the creation account. Genesis chapter 2. If you look at verse 2, it says, "And on the seventh day, God ended His work which He had done. He rested on the seventh day from all His work which He had done." In verse 3, "Then God blessed it the seventh day and sanctified it." God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it. So we find after 6 days of working, after 6 days of building everything, creating everything, the solar system, how gravity works, all we don't even have the remotest idea of what all went into this. When we really boil it down, the science has really helped us to understand that we have very little knowledge of how our solar system works, how the universe works. We know that there's just more and more of it all the time with the new telescopes that we have. And we start to see it on a whole nother level. And scientists are going, there's a lot that we don't know. Now, we were down at Ball State University at the planetarium, and it was neat to listen to them talk and say, you know, we do understand this. We know how this works. They go, there's the majority of it we don't. The majority of it we don't have a clue. And our kids look at us just like, hey, they're supposed to know it all. They tell us they know it all, and then all of a sudden they don't know it all. And so it's funny to watch how their brains work, going, okay, we really don't have this figured out. But we know it as part of how He fashioned and formed the earth, and including us, including animals and including human beings. That was part of that process that He went through. And this is the first scripture that talks about the Sabbath. Scripturally, this is the first place, and this becomes very important because what this tells us is that the Sabbath is not connected to any other covenants. It subsequently isn't connected to any covenant relationship that God makes throughout history. This is set outside of that. He designed the Sabbath before any of those covenants had been made with the nation of Israel or with individuals, either one. That this day is separate. It's separate. And so while the Sabbath may be a part of the Sinai covenant, while we see it built into the Ten Commandments, we'll look at that's reminders. We'll look at that those are put there as signs. They're put there as a memory of going, remember back. Look back at what I have done. But it predates all of those covenants. The Sabbath predates those. And God designed it that way because this wasn't going to go away. We know that God didn't need rest. It didn't wear Him out to build our world. He didn't get tired or exhausted from that. He just did it because He knew that we needed it. He knew that we needed a day to reorient. And there's a renowned Jewish scholar. I can't remember. I had his name written down. I forgot to put it into my notes. I'll have to look it up and send it out at some point. But he wrote about the Sabbath, and he coined the term a temple in time. Because what he wanted to bring up to the point is that when we think about the Sabbath and the beginning of the Sabbath, it's not like the temples. So we know that there was a temple in the wilderness with Israel when they actually established a more solidified temple with Solomon, when Solomon built the temple, that those were designated places that God was supposed to come down to. And I'm not even going to get into the second temple because we don't have any biblical reference that God ever was in that temple. But those were places where God goes, you know, this is our connection. This is where I'm going to come down and I'm going to be among you. I'm going to be part of you. That's where God dwelt. But this idea of a temple in time, it's kind of what the Sabbath is. It's setting apart this time frame. He goes, the seventh day is this day where you set aside everything else, that we rekindle this relationship that you're supposed to keep all week long. He goes, I know the normal cares of life, the normal activities, sometimes that slides. He goes, but take this. And time is set up by God. God lays outside of time. The only reason we have a time is because he designed it with the revolution of the earth and the revolution of the earth around the sun and the moon around the earth. That gives us our time. So God's outside of that. He created this. And that's the part that we have to really understand. This rest is something we need. This rest is something that we should desire because God set this apart, that this day is built not only for the physical, but it's built for the spiritual, and that through prayer, through Bible study, through fellowship, it's all of this extra time that we can have this closeness with each other and with God. And that's what the focus is. He wants us to constantly remember what he wants from us, that he wants us to be father-son, father-daughter relationship, that we are his children, and that's what he goes into. And so this temple in time, when we think about it, it's not a physical location. We have congregations all around the world that are holding the Sabbath. And so it's this time. It's not a specific place, which is significant for us because he tells us that he writes his commandments on our hearts. That's what he wants. He wants to put his spirit inside of us so that he can work with us, so that he can mature us. That's the frame that we go through. And so if we're looking at this and we think about, we're sitting there just watching the clock, whether it's at the beginning of the Sabbath or the end of the Sabbath, if we're sitting there watching the minutes tick by going, okay, wait for the Sabbath, now I shut everything down. It's not the mindset that God, I don't believe that's the mindset that or the intention that he had. That's getting back to that legalistic mindset of, okay, we're just being rule keepers. But he wants us to love the Sabbath. He wants the Sabbath to bring us joy because we know what the Sabbath means. We know the relationship that comes from this. And hopefully it becomes a natural part of who we are. And we're not just watching the time tick by. We've all been there, especially with my kids. They're going, can I turn the TV on now? And I'm going, guys, that defeats the whole purpose. If you're just going to sit here to wait to turn the TV on, just turn the TV on. And they go, what? I go, that defeats the whole purpose. And so it's hard to learn that because we do want to be respectful of the Sabbath and we don't want to infringe on what God has set up. But at the same time, if we're just waiting for it to go away, then we've lost the reason of the Sabbath. We've lost what it means. And so that's one of the challenges, is really trying to find joy on the Sabbath because we do set aside everything else. We change our lifestyle, we change our world for that day, and it becomes something different. The word rested comes from the Hebrew word Shabbat. And so there's a noun and a verb form of this. They're very similar. I have the two different spellings up here. One means to rest, Shabbat. And then the other is the rest. So that's that noun form versus the verb form of that. And so it literally does mean a time period, but it also means doing something physically, doing something spiritually. And that's where I said each of our families are a little bit unique in our traditions that we have in our home. of how we handle the Sabbath. I know a lot of families like to do nice Friday night dinners, something special. They get out the nice silverware and the nice plates. Sometimes they light candles. It's just something different to signify that the Sabbath has begun, that the Sabbath is this beginning of this day where we get to really change not only what we do, but our mindset, change our thought patterns, change the engagement that we have with God and His way. In the New Testament, there's a word, this word sabbaton. It's translated as a solemn rest, or a day of solemn rest. In both the Greek and the Hebrew, we have this idea of resting or ceasing from work, changing our normal lifestyle. And this is key to understanding the Sabbath, because the less we try to play with that, the what does day of solemn rest means, then the focus of that is, what am I allowed to do? What am I allowed to do, and what am I not allowed to do? And that's why I kind of gave you the reference to my kids, right? Because generally we turn off all electronics. We don't do it because they get that all week long. Not because God says, don't turn on the TV, don't play video games. It's because we try to set it apart from everything else. We go, okay, you have this all week long. This is your normal activity. So for this period, we want to be something different. We want to kind of change that. And so in some sense, we do have to do, what am I allowed to do? What am I not allowed to do? But we want to shift into a better situation than that. And that's where I go when we're sitting just watching the clock tick by, the minutes and the seconds go, now sunset's over. Now we go back to our stuff. What does that do for us? You know, and they're the legitimate questions. They're legitimate concerns, because we don't want to infringe on the Sabbath. God did set that apart, and we do want to be respectful of that. We do want to have the relationship. And so sometimes it's good to get counseling on that and talk with friends, talk with people and say, okay, what do you do on your Sabbath? How do you make it special? How do you find joy in it? Because I know there are a lot of people who struggled for many, many years. That's why I think so many of them, when worldwide said, well, it's not Sabbath anymore, you go to on Sunday, they easily gave that up because they viewed that as a burden. It wasn't something that they found joy in. They were stopped from doing what they wanted to truly do. I don't know that all of them went that way, but as quickly as turning on a light switch, they gave it all up and changed. That's one of the only things I can go back to, is that they truly didn't find joy in it. They didn't understand the value that the Sabbath held and what that really meant with connecting with God. So when each of us as individuals and our family units, we do sometimes have to understand the technicalities of what these words mean and what God expects of us. But you're not going to find in detail of what our 24-hour day should look like on the Sabbath. God doesn't say for the first 3 hours you're supposed to be praying and then get some rest and go to sleep and then wake up and do 2 hours of Bible study. He doesn't lay it out like that. But what he tells us is that this day is separate from every other day, that this is holy time, that this is sanctified. And hopefully you've experienced some of the benefits of that. In your actual life, you have benefited by observing the Sabbath day, by keeping this day, by doing something different than your normal routines, your normal schedules. We all need a day off. It's amazing how much God knows. Even if you get into the business world, they know they can't make people work 7 days a week, and that people actually are still productive. They found that giving people time off, they are actually more productive. They may work more hours in that 7 days. If they worked seven continuous days, it may be a total of more hours, but they get less work done because they're not motivated. They're tired, they're wore out, they're angry and grumpy. And God knows that we need physical rest. We need a physical reset at time. He knows that at some point we will physically crash. We'll get sick. We'll get irritable. Our bodies just cannot exist running like that. And so he gave us this day. He's perfect in everything that he knows. And so he gave us this day. He knows our limitations. He knows what we're capable of. And he built this day in for recovery. He built this in so that we could not only draw near to him, have time with each other. He goes, but you need to slow it down. You need to slow the pace down. And it's amazing to see how intimate his holy days are and what they mean for us. So the Sabbath was repeated to Israel in a pretty forceful fashion. If you flip back to Exodus chapter 16, we're going to move through several chapters here in Exodus. We'll hop through. So Exodus chapter 16, in Genesis, he defined the Sabbath day. He gave us what day it is, kind of set it aside. We see that given to man there, but we don't see that this is continuously repeated throughout the Bible. We don't see that it was given to Noah. We don't see it given to Abraham, of him, God telling him, well, Abraham kept the Sabbath. He did this. So we don't see that laid out. But what we do see, we find at different points that we come down to like the book of Exodus here. We find these significant points where he does reiterate. So it's not that the Sabbath disappeared for all those years. It was just that at this point in time, they needed it rekindled in their mind. They needed this brought back up. So if you look here, it's Exodus chapter 16. If you look at verse 23, so then it says, then he said to them, this is what the Lord has said. Tomorrow is a Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. So again, this isn't a focus on man. He goes, this is still God's day. This is a Sabbath to the Lord. But then he goes, tomorrow is a Sabbath rest. Tomorrow is a different day, how you're supposed to carry yourself. And so it's brought back into the mind of the Israelites. At some period of time, they lost some of the instructions from God. They'd lost some of the commandments. And being in captivity in Egypt, they lost some of the virtue underneath Pharaoh and what he expected of them, of what God was doing with them, what God expected of them. And so he reiterates here, he tells them, tomorrow is the Sabbath. Tomorrow is the day that I have set aside. This is my day. And so after all of the miracles of Exodus, after he walks them out of Egypt, he reminds them of this. Chapter 6 is where he repeats this forcefully. He lets them know, hey, this is something different. You're supposed to be doing something different. This isn't just another day. They weren't paying attention. And whether it was their parents or their grandparents, somewhere down the line, they forgot about what this meant. And so God deals with them in a very direct way, which is why we don't see it coming consistently through Abraham and Noah. We don't see it coming back and forth because we assume that it was continuously being kept at some point. They were doing it right, and at some point it got lost in translation. It got lost through the generations. And he reminds them. He goes, this day is different. This is still my day. If you flip over just a couple pages to chapter 20 of Exodus, you know, part of the Sinai covenant, the Sabbath was included in that. It's Exodus chapter 20. If you look at verse 8 and 9, look at the wording here. It says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. God commanded them to remember. Remember, if I came to you and said, remember the feast? What am I talking about? Am I probably talking about what's going to take place in the future? Or am I going, how was your feast last year? It's last year, right? You remember the feast. Or remember the feast 10 years ago. We're looking back at this time frame of remembering something that has been taking place. Maybe it was somewhere that we went that was significant. Something that happened that was significant. Even though it was included in the covenant here, the Sinai covenant, and it was included in the Ten Commandments, it was something that has been continuous from Genesis. And that's why we looked at the very beginning, the origins of that, to give us this understanding that it's extending all the way back to creation, that this isn't something new at this point. This is a part of their memory. He's trying to dig into their memory bank and say, somewhere down the line, you still remember this. He goes, dig deep down inside. Either you heard a story from your great-grandparents, like there's something here that you have to be remembering. And it's part of the requirement that he asks of them to keep this memory going, so they don't ever forget about it again. Because the penalty is very severe. Flip over to chapter 35 of Exodus. Exodus 35 and verse 2. And the penalty is not something to play around with. He didn't take it lightly. If you look at verse 2, look at verse 1. It says, "Then Moses gathered all the congregation of Israel together and said to them, 'These are the words which the Lord commanded you to do.'" So again, he's going back and says, you know, God is saying this. And look at verse 2. It says, "Work shall be done for 6 days, but the seventh day shall be a holy day for you, a Sabbath of rest to the Lord. Whoever does any work on it shall be put to death." He says, if anybody infringes on the holiness of this day, the sanctity of this day, the penalty is death. He's not playing around. He doesn't want to take the chances of them being turned away from it again. Because he saw what already happened. He saw what took place. And God, with his all-knowing wisdom, he understood the value of the Sabbath and what that meant for his people. Because they were supposed to be an example. In the process of this, the reason that he made this covenant with them is not that they have something special that nobody else in the world is going to get, but he wanted to use them as the model. He wanted to show the world of how this worked. And we know in the future, he's going to do the same thing. It's still going to be, they're going to be the model. Everybody's going to look to Jerusalem for how God interacts with man, the blessings that come from that, because it's significant. And so he's very forceful, not only telling them to remember, but he put a heavy penalty on it. He goes, "I don't want any of you disrupting what I have." And so he was willing that some should die to keep it protected. To keep his Sabbath protected, he was willing to say, "I can't have you part of this. I can't have you in this plan." Now we know that he would give them a chance somewhere down the line, but for what God was doing with his intents and purposes here, he goes, "I can't have you disrupting this." That's how serious he holds the Sabbath day, which is why on one level we don't want to become legalistic, but at the same time there's a seriousness to it that we do have to evaluate. We do have to look at what our Sabbath holds, what our day looks like, how we carry ourselves and how we interact with one another and what we do, because God holds this as a serious day. There's a seriousness to that. The Sabbath is shown as part of the spiritual law. It's codified in the commandments and in the Sinai covenant, but it's a spiritual element. That's why I don't think he laid it out hour by hour of what our day is going to look like, is because the spiritual side of it, he goes, "I want you to work through this. I want you to build this relationship." He goes, "Protect it, nurture it, care for it." He goes, "It's always in effect." He goes, "But you're all going to do it slightly different. You're all going to handle it a little different." Which is why we know it still exists today. And this isn't something that disappeared, or it's not something that's just for a small group of people. And unfortunately, that has gotten lost in translation over the years. And that's why I thought the Webster's definition was unique, because it didn't only include the Jews, but it did say, admit that there are some Christians. That was from the 80s. So almost some 40 years ago, they understood that there are Christians who are taking value. They're taking stock in what the Sabbath day is and what it means. It wasn't abandoned by everybody throughout the years. Flip over, or I guess you go back now. Go back just a couple chapters to chapter 31. So Israel and the Sabbath, if you head over to chapter 31, told you we'd hop around through these chapters a little bit, because we're going to piece all of this together and look at the significance of it. Not only the penalty, that's not the fun stuff, but we look at that it is held as a sign, which is why he told them to remember it, to keep that in their memory bank. If you look at Exodus chapter 31, if you look at verse 12, Verse 12, it says, "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, saying, Surely my Sabbath you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you." And then if you drop down to verse 17, it says, "It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed." And does this make it only for Israel? If we focused only on these verses, maybe. Maybe we could say, okay, this is only to their heritage, only to their generations. But it doesn't say it's a sign between me, he's saying God. Because it's a sign between me and the children of Israel forever, just to this specific group of people. That's why the New Testament's so significant. We start to see it unfold and develop into something completely different. We see the involvement of the Gentiles, and we see Sabbath keepers in the New Testament. And we watch all of that unfold, and what we bring into the New Testament and say about the Sabbath, Hebrews chapter 4 is particularly interesting when it helps us to give us an understanding of the Sabbath, that it wasn't just for Israel. It wasn't designed for only the Jewish people. It was designed for all of humanity, which is why we see it come back up in the millennium, why everybody will be taught this. You can write down Mark chapter 2 and verse 27. Mark 2, 27, it says, "And he said to them," this is Christ talking to him, he says, "The Sabbath day was made for man and not man for the Sabbath." He's not only speaking about the descendants of Abraham. He's talking about all of humanity. He goes, all of humanity, this is what this is designed for. And so we understand that, yes, God was working through heritage. He worked through Abraham, the descendants of Jacob, who had 12 sons, which did make up all of Israel. But it gets much larger than that, because working through that, you know, Joseph ended up putting his name on Ephraim, on Joseph, Jacob put his name on Joseph's sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, gave them the blessings, special blessings. But he's talking to the 12 tribes as a whole. He's talking to all of Israel, the descendants of Jacob. And so today when we talk about the Sabbath and we look at the remnant of Abraham and who culturally has done this, it's not all 12 tribes. It's just the Jews. It's just Judah. They're the only ones that have really stuck to this, along with some other Christians now. We see Christians, some keeping that as well. And so primarily when we talk about the people today, that's why growing up, or even today, if somebody finds out you're a Sabbath keeper, they go, the first question is, are you Jewish? It's because it's associated with the Jews, because they've been diligent about keeping it. The tribe of Judah has continuously kept that. They've never let that go. It's a continuous sign. It's a sign between God and his people. And they didn't want to ever let that go. And down through the history, the Jewish people, the remnant of whatever was left after being taken into captivity, the Jews were identified as these Sabbath keepers. The Jews never gave up on that. Even when we get down to Revelation, if you go back to Revelation chapter 12, so when you think about the Jews, they're not associated with, they don't commit adultery, they're not murderers, they're not stealers. It's the Sabbath. They're known for keeping the Sabbath. That's the kind of one of the identifying markers. And we know as time goes on, as we get closer to the return of Jesus Christ, it's going to be another marker. It's going to signify God's people versus everybody else. It's going to be something that we have to hang on to, that we have to clutch to, and we have to never give up. If you look at, it's verse 17, it's towards the end of it. It says, And the dragon was enraged with the woman, being the church. It says, he went to make war with the rest of her offspring, who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Satan is looking for the people who are still doing it right. That's why it's so important for us to know the fundamentals of God's doctrines. That's why we make this part of who we are. This has to be our identity. Because if this isn't our identity, then we may very likely give it up when things get tough. And we know we're going to be persecuted because of that. We know Satan is going to put a target on us because of that. But God says, you can still do it right. Because you can still have a level and a commitment to me, an involvement with me, an engagement to me. He goes, I'll be right there. He says, don't ever give these things up. And the Sabbath is a part of that. The Sabbath is a part of the whole plan. I should have told you to keep your finger there in Exodus. If you didn't, you can read it from the screen so you don't have to flip back. But Exodus 31, it says, you shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. And then verse 16 of 31, it says, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. As a perpetual covenant. It's a distinct covenant that's not excluding all of the other nations. It's not exclusive to the people, to an individual person or the nation of Israel. It's how God was using them as a model nation, but we know it will get opened up to everybody. It's a binding part of God's overall covenant, his relationship with all of humanity, what he wants from people. It's significant to understand what God wants, because he's very purposeful with everything he does. So when we think about the Sabbath and all the good things that it brings, there's something that we can't do with it, that we don't make this holy. He's the only one that does that. And we can find the value in that in the way that we treat it, in the way that we carry ourselves. If you look at, I'll read this one for you just for the sake of time. So this is Isaiah chapter 58, verse 13. It says, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honorable, and shall honor him, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasures, nor speaking your own words. It says we aren't supposed to be just going about our days just like everything else. He goes, but you can still find joy in that. He goes, you may not be doing everything that you want to. He goes, but there's a joy in this way of life. That's why I said we have to find joy in the Sabbath. Find your traditions. Find the things that you can create. Not to make this day that legalistic of I can and can't do this, but that we go, I need this day. I need this day. We need each other. We need the fellowship that goes on. That's a huge part of what God's doing. That's a big piece that's so significant for what he's doing in our lives. That's why it's so relevant to understand the ins and outs and try to not get tangled up in all the legalistic way that the Jews are today. All the laws that they have to protect the Sabbath. We may decide to do some things and not do other things, but we're not going to get down to the details of going, here's my checklist. This is what's acceptable, this is what's not. God expects us to have a relationship that we can enjoy with him. Something that's good and beneficial. And it's not just our own personal pursuits that we're searching for. He goes, this relationship is more powerful than anything that you can have on your own, which is why he wants us to find joy in it. Why he wants us to see the benefit of this. I want to stop there. I was hoping to get a little bit further, but I did not. We'll continue. There's a couple more slides I want to go through talking about the Old Testament, but then we'll get into the New Testament. We'll get into Jesus Christ and the Sabbath. And we'll see how that plays in, the interaction that Christ is talking to the Pharisees and the Sadducees and how much they get into, well, you can do this, but you can't do this. They were a lot more of, you can't do this. You can't do this, 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 this. This is not allowable. And Christ is starting to try to rectify some of that. And so hopefully this will give you a good basis of the origins, that this was created at the very beginning of our creation, and God is going to carry it forward all the way through the end.